Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
Back goes Bradley. Near the center field fence. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Mully and Hall. Live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
And a topside three at the buzzer is missed. And the ball game is over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. 113-97. Led by the Vooch. 32 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists. He's going to sell popcorn after the ball game.
The pitch by Boxberger. Bounce to third. Glove by Robertson. Bobbles picks it up. Throws to first. Ball game over as Bryant bounces out to third. The final, Milwaukee wins it 4-0.
That's going to affect things, but that's probably not going to happen. Abreu collects this and stops the bag to get out of the way. The Sox have a second straight win in Seattle, again by 6 runs. 10-4, your final score. The Eagle has landed in the loss column.
Lawson is carried on. A long shot. Pavelski just missed. Rebound, Ben. His pass broken up by Camp. DeBrincat able to hack it free. Kane chasing for the loose puck. Empty netter. Hawks win.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Our thanks to our sister station, WBBM, for the Bulls highlights. They were there because here on WSCR, you heard the Cubs. And thanks to those fine folks. And, of course, NBC Sports Chicago is where you found the Sox and the Blackhawks. Unfortunately, everybody but the Cubs won. We nearly had a clean sweep, but the Cubs went down 4-0, and that was the only stumble by any of our Chicago teams yesterday. A very good day in the wide world of Chicago sports, but not that grand slam that we were looking
for. It was fun, though. It was fun last night having four choices on your television set. Now, there was a little bit of stagger time between the Hawks game and the Pacers-Bulls game ended earlier than you had the Cubs throughout, but nice victory for the Blackhawks holding on against the Stars. Got a little bit crazy there at the end. Stars pulled a goalie, and the Hawks, they withstood the furious rally at the end. Kaner gets an empty netter. But the Sox, they have to stay up really late to watch that one end. Jose Abreu gets another grand slam, second homer of the year, 200th of his career, which was Hollywood-ish in Tony La Russa's vocabulary. That was his choice to describe it. Cool night. Now, the Cubs, they just have to get back in action. They have to hit. They have not hit, and it's becoming very familiar, but they've got to get some guys going. I think Jock Peterson is still looking for his first hit as a Cub after a spring training that was lights out, but what's wrong with him? I don't know.
Maybe he needs a statue. It's possible. I'm only saying that, David, because Dustin is the guy that goes crazy about White Sox statues, too many statues. And now we got the Fergie Jenkins statue coming. And I'm a big fan of Fergie, and I'm not going to read Ming's text because I thought it was absolutely mean. But I do understand that that when we start talking about who deserves the statue and who doesn't, I agree with this texter. He just says Theo. They got to get the statue of Theo. And I don't think there's any doubt about it that he's the next statue guy. But you look at where the Cubs are at now, we don't know who's here and who's gone. I hate to bring it up again because I think we're trying to ignore it, but there are a lot of guys left on this team from the great World Series victory whose future is clouded. Now, you know, Jock Peterson is the guy that's playing for a contract. I understand that. But, David, goodness gracious, we don't know who's here long-term or who's leaving or what's going to happen. And every time they lose a game, it kind of goes through your head, oh, they got to keep winning. What are you doing? You better keep winning, because if you don't, and God knows, you know, you need to win series against the Brewers. I know it's one game, but doesn't that always infect the conversation? Not effect, but infect?
Our conversation, I suppose, it's got to be on the back burner. It's got to be the backdrop in the context for everything that goes on this year. But if you are the Cubs, you that's got to be out of sight, out of mind. You can't be worrying about that. That's the reason that Anthony Rizzo established opening day as a deadline for negotiations. That's the reason why, you know, players don't like to do that. You can't consider the future implications to the point where it distracts and takes away from the present. And that's always the danger when you're talking about teams and players and coaches entering contract years, lame duck seasons, if you will. That's what we're looking at with the Bears. That's a different conversation. That's what we're dealing with with the Cubs, with some of their core players. But I don't know that after every game you have to evaluate what it means for the future of Anthony Rizzo, or after every start if somebody is in that situation. I think it's natural to look ahead, but I just think that's almost counterproductive for these players to look at it that way. So they've got to try to find a way to, you know, have this sort of tunnel vision, and it doesn't help, I guess, suppose, when that is the backdrop for every conversation that, you know, in regard to Javi Baez, in regard to Chris Bryant, and Anthony Rizzo to maybe a larger degree.
But, I mean, the reality of the season is that if Frankie Lindor signs an extension, then you got to go to Javi Baez and find out, hey, did you see that Frankie has this much money? Where are you at? Oh, I let my agents do the negotiating. I don't want to talk about it, and I need to work on my hitting. And, you know, it's very obvious, but those are the questions that arise every time something happens in the game. And I think I'm reacting as much to the text line as anything else. A lot of people are obsessed with it.
Yeah, and I think Javi handled that well. You know, he addressed it. He talked about it. And he's got that personality where I do think he can compartmentalize. Then he went out and hit an opposite field homer. Not that everybody's able to do that. I think different guys have different approaches. Some guys can block it out. Some guys can't. It's natural fans and media are going to discuss it every day of the season, perhaps in some way, shape, or form. That's part of the sports landscape and how much economics have sort of dictated how we talk about sports anymore. If somebody has a bad game, it's because they're pressing because their contract is up. It's not because, boy, that pitcher had really good stuff that night, as much as anything. So, yeah, it's going to be an ongoing conversation. And I just think from a bigger picture perspective, the Cubs, beyond the core, they've got to get guys going. They've got to get Ian Happ going. They've got to get David Bodie more consistent. They've got to get players that through this offense. It can't be feast or famine. And last night was a pretty big famine when Chris Bryant has your only hit.
The Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. 312-644-6767. Always a joy to talk to our friend Psycho. He's in Westchester. Psycho, good morning. Hey. How are you?
Hey, Psycho.
Good morning, guys. Love your show. Hey, David. The Cubs, they haven't been hitting all year. Against Pittsburgh opening day, what? They got two hits.
Yep.
Saturday, they scored five runs. They got five hits. I mean, they're not hitting at all. I mean, we fired the batting coach year after year. Chili Davis, they fired him years ago. He goes to New York. they're one of the best teams hitting-wise offensively. I don't know what it is. They can't get anybody consistently, like, one day Rizzo hits, Bryant doesn't hit. Next day Bryant hits, Rizzo doesn't hit. It's throughout the whole order. It's so stagnant. I mean, I watch a game, and of course I'm a big Cub fan. I watch every game. Last night I wasted 2.5 hours on one hit. Are you kidding? I got the package. I turned any hour game on. They got 7, 8, 9 hits. The Cubs, like, got one hit. I mean, how are you going to win games with that? I mean, something's got to be wrong. I don't know if they're the way they're coming up the bat, they're thinking, I don't know. Something's wrong with their attack, how to attack pitchers or what. Peralta had those guys eaten out of their hands last night. And this is very frustrating. I mean, come on, you're a professional baseball player. You should be hitting more than one hit. I mean, I'm just frustrated. I'll let you go, Ace Talk. I'll let you go.
Thanks, guys. Psycho.
Thanks, Psycho. Yeah, it's obvious and it's understandable. I mean, the frustration with this team because of their chronic problems. Anthony Iaposi has been here. This is his third season. He came in 2019, right. Had the short season last year, and he's returning for a third. And I think that the hitting coach is often the easy scapegoat or target, even though I'm not sure that's appropriate. David Ross has talked about being more selfish at the plate for guys like Javi and Bryant and just throughout the order. I don't know that we have seen that yet, Mully. I'm not sure if that's the answer, but it is something that, as Psycho points out, there's too many ups and downs. There's a lack of consistency that is maddening when it comes to the Cubs.
Yeah, well, they went into yesterday as what? The 28th team in baseball in terms of batting average, and they managed a hit. So I don't think that gets you too high. I mean, I haven't looked at it this morning, so I don't know where they're at, but I would imagine it's pretty rough, frankly. And, you know, here's the thing. Yesterday was an absolutely beautiful day.
Yes.
It was a gorgeous, beautiful day. If you didn't get out of the house, then it's a pity because it felt like San Diego weather. It was perfect. It was like perfect weather. And, you know, I don't know today. I haven't looked at a forecast. I don't know if you walk outside and God knows we could have snow. I mean, it's just April, early April, it's just a crapshoot. But yesterday was perfect. And I thought as I sat there watching the game that, wow, you know, wouldn't it be great if you had an afternoon Cubs game with this kind of weather? And, you know, even in the early evening, it's great, but there's something about a day game. And I get it. Kids are still in school and we, you know, are in the midst of a pandemic. But whatever the weather is today, it'd be a great day to go to the ballpark. But I get how frustrated people are when their team doesn't hit, because when a team's not hitting, it looks exactly like what Psycho said. It looks like people don't care and you just, oh, these guys are going through the motion. That's not the case. It's just you can't look good when you can't get a hit.
You're right. And when you look at the Cubs and, you know, we're only five games in to this season, Hap, Bodie, Rizzo, Peterson, Contreras, those five guys are a combined 5 for 64. So that's terrible.
Wow.
And it's not something that you can blame on the weather. That's a really good point. In some Chicago springs, you could do that, but it's not been the case. Today's going to be another beautiful day at Wrigley Field. And Mully, getting back to, you know, how we started this segment, we talked about how the conversation so typically and often goes to the contractual status of players, and that's why the Cubs need to get off to a good start, or else is implied you're going to be sellers rather than buyers. Here's the other aspect of that, though. Remove the contract from the equation. At some point, you start to look at your lineup and you wonder, do you have to make a move just to shake things up? Because if you continually are not hitting and your offense is struggling, you have to do something to address that, because the same combination of hitters has been here, the core, for the last couple seasons when you have been chronically disappointing as a team offensively. So I wonder where this is headed. It is early, as Ian Happ said. It is very early, but you don't like the early signs.
Let's get to Brian. Brian is in New Lenox. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I know you were talking about potential Cubs statues, but I had a little twist on this. I want to bring up a potential White Sox statue.
Please.
If Jose Abreu keeps up this pace that we're used to, that we've seen out throughout his whole career, he gives you three more years of 100-plus RBIs. Could you see a Jose Abreu statue going up at the
Absolutely.
G-spot?
Absolutely. You know, I
good call, Brian.
I think that's a great call, Brian. I think that Abreu probably is close to that already, honestly. And I think that if they can, you know, I was talking to my son about this yesterday as we were watching him. You know, I wasn't crazy about the idea of bringing him back because I thought it was kind of this connection to teams that weren't very good. I couldn't have been more wrong about that. I think that he is extraordinary. As he's standing there with the red gloves in his back pocket hitting a grand slam, he's doing it for himself and he's doing it for his fallen comrade. The guy's unbelievable. The guy works his rear end off. The guy is, you know, coming off an MVP season. I got nothing but time for Jose Abreu. I think that he is a total pro, and his work ethic and everything that he's accomplished, his commitment, I'm coming back with the White Sox whether they want me or not.
Right.
It tells you a lot, and it sort of is the pathway to a lot of this rebuild and what's been happening. And I would absolutely support a statue for him.
And that last point may be as significant as any, because when you look at the place that certain players hold in your history, you mentioned John Lester with the Cubs because of what came after John Lester came. Well, Jose Abreu has opened the door wide for a lot of guys who followed, and the Cuban connection can't be overlooked or overstated. So I think when you look at his production, you look at his leadership, how significant he appears to be in this phase of White Sox baseball, that's a good call. And that's a possibility, because it's more than just the home runs. Jose Abreu is a total package in terms of leader, and we know what he can do. He's the MVP, or the reigning MVP. So that would be a possibility, I think, that makes a lot of sense for the White Sox.
All right, we got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Coming up today at noon, it's the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Cubs manager David Ross.
The ball gets hit on the ground. You feel the energy of the crowd standing up and starting to kind of make a slight noise, anticipating the double play to be turned. And Anthony catches that turn at first base to complete the double play, and the place erupts. Like, that's real, man. It's a pleasure to come to work at Wrigley Field at any time, but it's so much more special when there's fans in the stands.
It's got
to
be Lawrence Holmes, live from Chicago, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey Station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Edbert Alzolay gave up a three-run homer in the first inning the night after Alec Mills, the pitcher he beat out for a spot in the rotation, looked sharp, earning a save when pressed into ninth-inning duty. Do you think Alzolay felt the pressure of Mills' strong performance? Mills acknowledged how disappointed he was getting demoted to the bullpen, but do you think it'll be sooner, later, or never that he'll be a starter again?
You know, I think that I can divide these two guys in my mind. I don't have them connected. I see them as separate, and I think it's because the style of pitching. I don't think that Edbert Alzolay is looking at his performance through the lens of how Alec Mills did. Maybe Cub fans should, maybe the team should, but I don't think the player need, and I don't think that he should. So I think that if you're a starter in Major League Baseball, it's got to be you against the opponent, and it's got to be your performance and how it stands up on its own. I don't think that you can compare yourself to another pitcher, especially a guy with such a different style than yours. I think that Alzolay, while being aware that he beat out another guy for it, he also has to be aware that that this is about him, and this is about how he performs, not in comparison to anyone else. So I think that Alzolay, you know, stumbled early, which was, you know, a concern you had going into the game. It was one of the things you were watching. How does he start the game? And that will determine how strong he pitches in the game. But I think that one of the things that, is so unique about Alzolay within this group is that he's different than the other pitchers. And, you know, Mills as kind of a contact guy, I don't know that he will again enter the rotation, but I think that we've seen him have some success. So if anyone gets hurt or if you have a need to go to someone, he's the next guy up. Now, having said that, I hope that I'm glad they have Alzolay. I think it's important for the future of the team. I think you got to go through these difficult times with young pitchers. Every young pitcher has their inconsistencies, and you hope that they learn to kind of figure out their game as they go forward. So I think Alzolay's his situation is unique and separate from anybody else, and I don't think he's going to lose his job to Mills after they made that decision, certainly not after one start.
Not after one start. I think he's got to worry about himself and try to focus on and reaching his potential that way and not have to focus on what is done by any other pitcher on the staff. Easier said than done if you're a young pitcher who is yet to prove himself and who is, you know, last year had an opportunity that he really didn't take advantage of. So you are now, you're there because of the potential, not production. This was a choice by the Cubs to, you know, opt for potential over production. Alec Mills is a guy that is easy to take for granted. You look at him and he does have a good repertoire of pitches, not ideal for a closer to you don't look at him as having that kind of stuff that says, all right, I'm gonna throw the ball by you and I'm gonna miss your bat. That's not who he is. I think he probably was penalized for that because stylistically he was too similar to Kyle Hendricks and Zach Davies. So it was the search for somebody that was different in the rotation. And there's Alzolay who he needs to kind of develop and progress for the good of the organization. So they went to him. So he probably does feel pressure. I do think it's going to be an ongoing evaluation. I wouldn't lock into the idea if I'm the Cubs that he is your guy, your fifth starter. You know, Alec Mills is pitched well enough, not only just the other night and being pressed into closer duty, but I think he deserves a long look at being reconsidered. We heard from him yesterday. It bugged him when he got demoted, and it should. So he handled it well so far. I think this is an ongoing conversation that last night, I don't think it was related to the pressure that Mills created, but I do think that every start, Alzolay's got to approach it as it could be, not his last, but he's being watched and watched closely.
A pick six to end the half!
In the third inning for the Sox, Nick Madrigal bobbled a double play ball. Andrew Vaughn couldn't make a play at the left field line, an experienced outfielder makes. And Zach Collins let a dropped third strike turn into a tying run. None of those plays were considered errors, but all of them underscore the Sox's defensive issues. Where's your confidence that the defense will improve? How?
I don't know that I have a great deal of confidence that the defense will improve. I mean, I'm willing to understand and forgive even. You know, the Andrew Vaughn play was a tough one that even Stoney alluded to that, you know, if you're a veteran, experienced outfielder, you probably make that running up against the wall in left field, the corner. He didn't make it because he's not an experienced outfielder, but he's pressed into that kind of action. So I get that. You know, I don't understand the Madrigal consistent issues. He is, as they alluded to last night during the broadcast, he's fighting himself. Nothing looks natural defensively for a guy that came to the Sox supposedly was after winning a college gold glove. Really? I mean, that doesn't look like this is a guy. And Nick Madrigal cannot be the guy that makes these kind of mistakes consistently. He's got to be the guy that is the margin for error has got to be razor thin. So he's got to make these plays. If he makes that double play, Lucas Giolito might have been looking at a different stat line last night, and that inning certainly would have gone a lot different. Zach Collins, same deal. You can't have guys whose positions, these are their natural positions, make these chronic mistakes. So I don't know that I have confidence the Sox defensively are going to get much better. I just think they're going to have to be good enough offensively to overcome it.
You know, Andrew Vaughn had one of his better nights. He got his first career hit, and he, you know, doubled. He walked a couple times. It seemed like it was a good night for him. The guy doesn't belong in left field. We know that. This is just a desperation ploy because they don't have anybody else to put out there. You know, their left fielder, the guy who started the season in the position, is now playing shortstop in Leury Garcia because you got a couple of injuries. Adam Engel is on his way back, and he will help a ton in the outfield. And you know, obviously, Tim Anderson, we don't have an update on his injury. Hopefully it's not a serious hammy, and he can get back sooner rather than later. But he's not going to play in this series. I think you got to expect that with Andrew Vaughn. The magical thing I don't understand. I also don't think Zach Collins is a very good catcher. I think that, you know, hit a nice home run yesterday. That was huge to get them up and running. And obviously Abreu with the grand slam, you know, slammed the door on him. The thing is, you know, they didn't lose the game because of their defensive problems. But it's a problem because you feel like if this continues, they will lose games. But they, you know, other than Madrigal, I think everything else was expected or everything else was kind of possible. He's the guy that needs to get his act together. Simple as that. He's got to figure it out, and he's got to do better in the field. It doesn't make any sense. He's got to run the bases better. He's got to play better defense and continue to be the kind of player that he is in terms of not striking out and getting the ball in play and all that stuff. But I think the other things were kind of predictable, and they didn't affect the game. You know, when we talk about the Cubs and Adbert Alzolay, starting pitching is not a problem for the Cubs. It really isn't. That's not what the problem is. The problem is the offense remains broken. And when we look at the White Sox, defensively, that's going to be a problem if it continues. And it started wrong. So I think so far in our questions, we're looking at two different things, one of which actually is a concern. I'm definitely concerned that the White Sox can't play defense, but I think it's predictable given the situation they're in.
A pick six of 100 yards!
Do you agree with Frank Thomas, who said the other night that Yoan Moncada looks uncomfortable to him as the cleanup hitter and would do better in a different spot in the lineup? Is Moncada under too much pressure in that role and trying to do too much?
I liked that Frank said that, and I thought there was truth to it. You know, Frank's really an interesting guy because he knows hitting inside and out, and, you know, when he talks about what happens when a guy first becomes a DH and isn't used to being a DH because he wants to be a position player, it's interesting to hear him talk about that because he went through it. And I do think that there is pressure on Yoan Moncada that is different when he's the cleanup hitter as opposed to other spots in the lineup. I don't think he should be the cleanup hitter. But I think that the problem they have, again, is the injuries have created a situation where he could be the cleanup hitter. Now, if he's putting pressure on himself to do too much, then that's got to shift and change, and they need to talk to him about it. And that's why I'm glad that Frank brought it up. But I don't know that, again, I think that it's like the defense, right? You lost your left fielder, and your shortstop is down. Your options are not ideal for how you're putting the lineup together right now, and this is just kind of the way that Tony has figured it out, and this is what he wants to do, and I'm gonna bow to his better baseball judgment.
Yoan Moncada has 4 hits and 22 at-bats. That's 183. He struck out 11 times so far. He has 5 walks, but he struck out 11 times in 22 at-bats. That's half the at-bats. Something isn't working. Maybe it's mental. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's the way they're pitching, and maybe it isn't. But when you have a player that is scuffling, and that is the definition of scuffling, you got to do something to change the routine, to change the state of mind. So if that means moving him out of the fourth position, do it. Do it already. You don't have Eloy Jimenez, but you do have other options if you're Tony La Russa. So I think it's early in the season. You're still in sort of experimental mode. So I would experiment by moving Moncada immediately.
Pick six.
The Bulls game last night in Indianapolis was their first of 5 road games in 7 nights, with trips at the Raptors and Hawks on Thursday and Friday, followed by games at the Timberwolves and Grizzlies on Sunday and Monday. What is your predicted record in those four games? Do they need to start stacking wins?
Absolutely, they do need to start stacking wins, even though they're coming off back-to-back victories against the Nets and the Pacers. This has got to continue. This is why you got Vooch. This is why you made the deals. This is what you wanted to do, is go on a little bit of a run here. So out of those four games, if you are the Bulls, you've got to feel like you've got a shot at three, to win three of the four, even though it's challenging in terms of the demands physically. You've got to, you don't know what that does to Zach LaVine's ankle, but the offense has been running through Vooch and running very well. So I think that the Timberwolves, you got some beatable teams here. So ideally 3-1, but of those four games, I think it's probably going to be 2-2.
Yeah, you know, it's a good answer, David. I think it has to be 2-2. I think that when you consider the five games in seven nights, they've won one already. So, you know, I was thinking they got to go 3-2 in the five games. So now they got to go 2-2. You know, the Hawks are in a, you know, a better team than the Bulls right now. I think you look at the Raptors are sort of coming back a little bit, but they struggled, no doubt about it. They're right behind the Bulls. The Bulls are only, you know, what are they now? 21-28, 22-28. They need to start stacking wins. I think that when you have teams that you can beat, you have to beat them, and I think they need to split the next four. 3 out of 4. Would help them to kind of get closer to where they want to be. If they could win all these games, if they could actually put together a nice 6-game winning streak, that's how you move up in the standings, and that's how you get your season turned around. I don't know if that's not asking too much, and those games are all on the road. But I like the Bulls on the road. I'm going to go with 3-1 in these four games.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
With reports that the Falcons are open to trading the 4th overall pick in the NFL draft, if the Bears were willing to put together a massive package for Russell Wilson, would you recommend Ryan Pace offer a similar package to move up and take a franchise quarterback? Does it depend on who's available at number 4, or would you say no way?
It's difficult. I would actually say that it would depend on who's available. I mean, there are quarterbacks I like and quarterbacks I don't like, and if they moved up from what I like, that would be okay. I'm thinking that it would be more likely that they could move up at a later spot. I think they need a player, you know, they need Justin Fields to fall a little bit. And then, you know, if you move up 10 spots, it's less cost than if you're moving from 20 into the top 5. I don't think that's a wise idea for the Bears, because it would take too much of their future draft capital. And I'm not even sure they have enough, quite frankly, to move up. The massive package for Russell Wilson, you know, I understand that. And that still should be out there if Russell Wilson, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see if, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, the best place for him might be as a backup in Seattle. And then that would give Seattle an option as to what they're going to do with Russell Wilson. I don't know where they are cap space in terms of trying to fit a guy like him in, but if they make a move like that, then maybe, just maybe, the Bears could pull off that trade. I don't predict that though, David. I think the Bears are hunting for a quarterback. I think we're going to see something happen. I don't think they can come out of this offseason and feel good with Andy Dalton at QB1. I just don't. If they do, then it's going to be a very mediocre year, and the stuff we talked to Dan Bernstein yesterday about is absolutely true.
I like Justin Fields. I really do, but I don't know that I would give up all that would be necessary to move up to number 4 to get him. If it's not Zach Wilson, if it's not Trevor Lawrence, I would hope that there's an adult in the room at Hallis Hall that saves Ryan Pace from himself. You cannot allow, 4 years after the debacle that was the Mitch Trubisky draft pick, you cannot allow him to do that again. You cannot allow him to hijack the future of this franchise by giving up and overpaying for a definite maybe. And that, as good as these guys are, at 4, you're getting definite maybes. Drafts are projections. So I do not think under any circumstance, unless it were those two guys, the first two quarterbacks expected to go, that's not going to happen. I would let Ryan Pace trade up. You have to look at this draft differently. You're not going to do that. That would buy them time. maybe some hope, but there would be no guarantees. So I would definitely discourage any instinct that he would have to move up and give up a king's ransom to do so.
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
What do you make of Aaron Rodgers doubling down on the beautiful mystery of his future yesterday? Rodgers said, quote, "All I can do is play my best, and I feel like I did do that and may have thrown a wrench into some timelines that may have been thought about or desired," unquote.
Well, as an ode to the fill-in Jeopardy host, I will phrase this in the form of a question. How is the next great Bears quarterback spending his offseason?
There you go, David. That's it. Rodgers clearly wants to move to Chicago. I think you read it there. You know, listen, he's a really interesting cat. I mean, he's a really bright guy. Yeah. And what he's doing here is kind of smart. I mean, he's putting nothing but pressure on the organization. They don't want to give me an extension. So, hey, you know, they control it. My future, it's a beautiful mystery. I have no idea where I'm going to get a, you know, talk to them. I mean, I'm just a guy that works here. He saw how Brett Favre left. He understands that they have, in their minds, drafted his replacement. And the minute that he falters, that he could be replaced. So I think that at age 37, he knows there's another chapter out there for him. If it's not in Green Bay, it is elsewhere. And that gives him a bit of power over these guys that don't want to extend him and pay him, which is clearly what he wants. But he's handling it with great aplomb, and I think that he's trying to keep the fans on his side and point them in the direction of where they ought to be upset, and that is, of course, to the people that are making the decisions about the future of the position. So it allows him to kind of, when the time comes, bow out and say, well, I'm going to Chicago. What am I going to do? Because the future's a mystery, and they have my replacement. Go talk to them. I love it. I think he's a really bright guy. I watched him on Jeopardy again yesterday. It's fun to see him play the role of Alex Trebek. I'd love to talk to him about that because I read that he has studied a bunch of tape on it. And I love that idea that
he's serious about wanting that job.
But you know, I mean, what a pay cut that would be, right? But I mean, he loves that show. He handles it. He's handling it like it's a tribute to Trebek, the way he's going through the categories and everything. He's very professional about it, very relaxed about it. I think he's great at it. So it's fun. I like it. All right, let's get ready for KC Johnson. We're going to bring in KC. We'll talk about the Bulls, the big win. Can they start stacking them? That remains the big question, and we'll ask it of KC Johnson next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
The Cubs game live on your mobile device.
Can you believe it?
Wow. Yes.
Magnifico.
If you live in the Chicago area, you can take the Cubs with you on your mobile device or smart speaker through the Odyssey app.
It's got a chance. Cubs win.
Download the Odyssey app now.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Banks it in.
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Do not do it like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. KC Johnson is brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. And KC kind enough to join us on our Twitch stream here. So get to Twitch and you'll see KC. Looks like a million. KC, good morning. How are you?
Morning, KC.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Living the dream. What else can you say? Watching the Bulls win. Vooch is he's the answer to whatever question there might be. It helps if the opponent is a little bit undermanned, but let's not bring that up. Is this the start of something? Will they begin to stack some wins here, KC?
Well, this is certainly the opportunity to do so, Molly. They've got certainly an upcoming stretch here against teams that are kind of right in their little bunched up area in the middling Eastern Conference. And you talk about a shorthanded Pacers team. I mean, the team they're facing tomorrow night in Tampa in the Raptors is also extremely shorthanded, not only with injuries, but then there was a fight last night, so there might be some suspensions coming down for players leaving the bench area. So tonight's another opportunity. It is followed by a tough back-to-back against the Hawks, who have won four straight, but another team you're chasing. And you know, what you saw last night was just a team that's starting to find a little bit of chemistry with Vucevic. They're completely changing their style of play, playing a lot of offense through him. And you saw it even before these two straight wins. You saw it in that Phoenix game. You saw it in that Utah game. So there's certainly a lot of encouraging signs for a team that that wants to get out of that play-in spot and into the big boy picture, the top six of the Eastern Conference.
And, KC, in both of those victories, it has been interesting that Vucevic has taken more shots than Zach LaVine. And last night, by a pretty wide margin, 29 to 18, I believe it was. And how much of that is because of Zach LaVine's ankle, and how much of that is by design? Because, as you pointed out, it's obvious when the Bulls are running their offense, now it's through Vooch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is partly because of the ankle. Zach is really playing through a pretty banged-up ankle, and you got to give him a lot of credit for doing that. He did sit out the Phoenix game, missing his first game of the season with that, and he's missing some shots that he normally makes. He's been so efficient, as you guys know, all season, and he's missed some pretty good looks that he usually makes. So I do think partly is the ankle. But look, you know, this is the thing. I mean, Zach has never played with an as accomplished of a scorer as Vucevic. And really, you could say vice versa. And that's the focal point for this team moving forward, is how those two play together. In theory and in practice lately, you are seeing why this is going to be a nightmare for opponents. I mean, their pick and roll and pick and pop chemistry and options are seemingly endless. And, you know, I do think it underscores how Zach all along has said, you know, I don't need to score 27, 28 points a game as long as we win. This dude just wants to get in the playoffs. You guys know that. You've listened to him grow and mature and more loudly say that each season. He's tired of losing. So if he's averaging 27.2, if he goes down to 23, I asked him that directly last night. You go down to 22, 23 points per game and you guys are in the playoffs, are you good with that? And I knew what he was going to say, but I needed him to say it. You know how beat writing works. So he said, you know, of course, you guys know me. And he's fine. He's as happy as anybody. They've got a guy he can throw the ball down to and maybe take a little bit of a possession off or a half a possession off. There's been a lot on his plate, and to have another all-star option is certainly a boon for Zach and for the Bulls.
And he's got a sore ankle. I mean, we know that the ankle is still an issue, and you've got to play through it, and he's doing that. But this allows him to have somebody that the team can lean on that isn't Zach LaVine. I mean, it's almost like a perfect scenario where, you know, he can then improve, come back, do what he was doing earlier in the year.
For sure. And the phrase he used last night, guys, is it's a relief. When we ask kind of like what it's like to have another guy. I mean, as I said just before, I mean, like, there's been so much on Zach's plate the last few seasons. And, you know, that's where the empty calorie score label kind of started. He was scoring a lot of points for a bad team. Well, he's still scoring a lot of points, and now it's impacting winning. And when you add a guy like Vucevic, it affords him the opportunity to not have to carry as much of an offensive load. There are going to be nights, guys, where he still has a Zach LaVine night. I mean, that's coming, assuming he gets healthy and gets through this ankle situation. He's just too talented of a scorer not to. But, you know, again, when you add a guy like Vucevic, you've just got so much more flexibility offensively, and you can see those guys really kind of figuring things out together.
KC, six guys in double figures last night. I think it's interesting to see how Lowry and Kobe White find their spots within the offense because of what we just talked about and how everything is built around Vooch and Zach LaVine. And now they're going to have to be guys that they have to take advantage of the opportunities that may not be as often as they were before, but they still have to be guys that the Bulls can rely upon.
For sure, David. And I thought actually last night was about as perfect of an offensive scenario as you can have. I mean, maybe not perfect, because Vooch and LaVine didn't shoot a high percentage. Vooch was close to 50%, but he's such a good shooter, he's usually above that. And Zach had an off shooting night for him, but still had, you know, a good box score with 19, 8, and 6. But, you know, when you get that kind of double-figure offensive reserve scoring like Markkanen and White provided in limited minutes and limited shots, that's really an encouraging sign if you're a Bulls fan. You know, I got to be honest, I was a little surprised. Billy's not usually that direct and revealing about usage. And last night, you know, he flat out said, you know, these guys aren't going to be featured guys anymore, talking about Lowry and Kobe. And that's a pretty large admission for, especially for one player that, you know, was kind of all eyes were on him as the season started with his rookie contract extension. And if he hits on that, you know, he and Zach are your building blocks. And now, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about it. It's starting to have the feel of you wonder what Lauri Markkanen's future is here in Chicago, particularly with his upcoming restricted free agency and the fact that he was, you know, in trade talks at the deadline. So you're absolutely right, David, that the opportunities are not going to be as bountiful for those two players, and they've got to be efficient in those minutes, and they certainly were last night.
He got kicked, right? He had some kind of issue, and he didn't even come back in the game. And didn't Billy say that he could have brought him back in, but they didn't need to, and it wasn't, like, as serious as maybe it looked when he kind of went off?
Yeah, that's all accurate. You know, we're not there. I actually didn't even see on the broadcast that he was kicked, but somebody there kind of gave me a heads up that he was actually a fan that I know that was at the Pacers game, texted me and said that a trainer was looking at Lowry. So I just asked Billy about it. Post-game journalism in the age of Zoom, baby. But
that's great.
But you know, I just asked Billy about it, and Billy said it didn't seem anything big, but he did get kicked in the leg, and or else Billy would have brought Lowry back. It's something we'll check the injury report for today, but it didn't sound too serious. And the main reason he didn't come back was because they were up by so much.
Casey, I know you're not the biggest college basketball guy, but kudos for the hustle yesterday. You got Denzel Valentine on the record with an interview and talking about what his brother Drew meant to him and his development. And Drew, obviously, the new coach at Loyola. That was a fun conversation. Nice story. You could really sense just the emotion that the family's feeling with this news.
Yeah, spot on, David. And I may not be a college basketball fan, but I am a Valentine family fan. I actually have gotten to know the father, who was a longtime high school coach, coached both those guys at Powerhouse Lansing Sexton High School. I actually played at Michigan State, where a certain graduate assistant named Jim Boylan worked under Judd Heathcote. Carlton Valentine raised two fine young men. I got to share a quick personal story. Our youngest son, who's now a seventh grader, did the Loyola basketball camp. I live five blocks from the gym, you know, a few years ago, and I actually asked Drew to make my son run extra wind sprints, and he happily obliged. So I've got a little bit of connection with the Valentines, and yeah. You guys, come on, man. I mean, that's obviously your alma mater, Mully. And Porter is such a force of nature. And Drew's got, to me, I mean, not exact. No one's exactly the same, but he's got just natural charisma and leadership ability. You can meet a guy like Drew Valentine once and just kind of feel his presence. In that regard, to me, it's an analogous to Porter, who also was fantastic at that camp for my kids. So yeah, it's neat to see. And so this is a college basketball story I am following, and I watched the championship game Monday night too. Man, Baylor just kicked their butts. So,
well done.
I keep seeing Corey Kispert mentioned it going to Golden State because he's a 3-point shooter. I thought he kind of did not have a very good tournament. I didn't think he had a very good championship game, but the idea that he could be, you know, a guy that you use like with Steph and with Thompson, all that idea is probably a sound one. But I thought it was surprising that he'd be mentioned that high as a draft pick after that game. But that's,
yeah, I mean, I've only seen him play twice. I watched one game during the tournament of theirs in the final, so I can't be the expert. I have not talked to any scouts about him yet. What I would say is my takeaway from the final is that he struggles to get shots off against athletic defenders because he couldn't even move, man. That Baylor defense was incredible Monday night, man. So, anyway.
Yeah, that was fun. I love watching the college game with like an NBA eye. I love that you said that. That Suggs kid looks pretty damn good. He could be.
He's okay. I think he'll make the league.
I think you're right. Although David wants him drafted in the NFL draft, right, David?
Play quarterback too. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a
there
good quarterback.
Go. I
Casey.
Like it.
I know.
Casey, thanks, buddy. Great catching up with you.
Thanks,
appreciate
Casey. Good stuff.
All right. Good morning, guys. Have a good one.
That's Casey Johnson. That was a great story. That was fun to hear Denzel talking about his brother. That is that's a great story, and we'll have Drew on later on in the program. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hey, it's Dan Bernstein.
And Layla Rahimi.
From the Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
Join us from 9 a.m. to noon. You have to love April with all the sports going on. Ian Happ is with us. Cody Decker joins us at 11 at 10:40, the Midday Midway. And David Faraday joins us as well.
Next on Bernstein and Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.